It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, we look at Puerto Rico's role as a U.S. territory in the wake of Hurricane Fiona and what it would take to become a full state. First, Jill Nadeau joins us now because it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Member Drive. The largest source of funding for Wisconsin Public Radio programs comes from listeners like you. This drive is your chance to support all the programs you listen to throughout the year. Take that important step when you donate at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Hi, Rob. It's good to be with you today. You know, it's the last day of our challenge where a group of generous members have given us $25,000 in matching funds, but they'll only let us have it when 500 people, including you, step up to support the programs that you count on.
It's their way of encouraging you to join them and supporting the WPR programs that inform and inspire you and the entire state of Wisconsin.
So your participation right now is it's vital. So be one of the 500 people to meet this challenge before midnight. It starts with your gift at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
All right, the clock is set and ticking. We can do it. We could do it with your help. Now, federal and state tax dollars, which do come from listeners like you, provide important funding here for WPR programs. But voluntary listener contributions are the biggest piece of support for WPR programs.
Absolutely. You know, you make the difference. You make the quality, the variety, and the independence of programs on Wisconsin Public Radio possible. Because WPR, it matters to you. So make a personal contribution to pay for the programs you listen to at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Keep your WPR pride on display when you carry the latest Wisconsin Public Radio tote bag. The medium-sized tote is handy for trips to the store, the library, or a picnic lunch, maybe. Ask for yours with your gift of $10 a month or more right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Our tote bags are awesome, and they're strong, and I love putting books in them. On Wisconsin Public Radio, you get access to the world, and that really makes a difference in your life. So you get the news and the information that you need to stay informed and conversations that make you think, along with great music and entertainment that help you relax.
No matter where you are, when you listen to WPR, you're a global citizen hearing from artists and reporters and experts because you appreciate this connection to the wider world. Make your gift now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And it's super easy to do, probably the easiest thing you'll do all day. All it takes is a few minutes of your time and a gift of any amount, say, well, maybe $10 a month.
And then that donation is going to keep coming back to you every day in the form of engaging conversations here on the Ideas Network. Show your support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Give as generously as you're able.
And remember, our member challenge is still in effect. When 500 people make a gift for WPR, $25,000 from generous members will be secured for the WPR programs that you rely on.
Support the programs you value. Show off your love for WPR with the latest WPR tote. It's a blue and orange. It'll really pop as you carry it for work or errands or fun. It starts right now with your gift of $10 or more online at WPR.org, or you can call 888-202-2552.
Now is a great time to become a sustaining member. It's easy to set up, convenient, ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or your credit card. So get started at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Jan in Muscadet says, WPR is my primary source of information and entertainment at home and while traveling. Thank you, Jan. And Jared in Wanakee says, I love early afternoons on WPR. Central Time is a great way to keep my brain working and my heart connected to my community. Jared, I'm right there with you. Central Time keeps my brain working too. Mostly, you know.
Mostly.
Join Jared and Jan with your gift right now.
WPR is listener supported, and you know that means that your gift is powerful. It really, really makes a difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You count on us for great conversations each and every day here on the Ideas Network. We count on you to help pay for it all. Make your very important gift at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. And thank you so much for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Central Time. After Hurricane Ian moved through Florida, residents of Puerto Rico are still recovering from Hurricane Fiona earlier this month. 20% of Puerto Rican customers are still without power. Many are dealing with water outages as a result. As the U.S. turns its attention to recovery in Florida, some Puerto Ricans are worried they may be overlooked or forgotten. And the territory is still dealing with some of the consequences of Hurricane Maria back in 2017. Puerto Rico is a U.S. territory. Would the response be different if it were a state? Our next guest is an expert on how Puerto Rico functions under U.S. law. He's here to help us understand what it means to be a territory instead of a state or a sovereign nation. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think Puerto Rico should become a state, the 51st state in the United States, or should it stay as a territory? If you are from Puerto Rico or have family or connections there, what have your experiences been like with the island? What are you hearing right now? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Sam Ehrman is a professor of law at the University of Michigan. His research and teaching focuses on citizenship, the Constitution, empire, race, and legal change. He's the author of the book Almost Citizens, Puerto Rico, the U.S. Constitution, and Empire. Sam, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Sam, can you remind us how Puerto Rico briefly became a U.S. territory?
Sure. So back in 1898, there was a war involving the United States and Spain that had begun over conflicts in Cuba, but then spanned to the Philippines and Puerto Rico. And so the United States invaded Puerto Rico as part of that, and then in 1899, annexed the island from Spain.
Here we are still in 2022. Puerto Rico is a territory and never has become a state. Why is that?
Well, up until the annexation of Puerto Rico and the Philippines, the assumption was anywhere that was annexed was eventually going to become a state. And that was true, most recently with Hawaii, which was annexed in 1898. But when the United States annexed the Philippines, there were a lot of racist fears about what it would mean to make the Philippines a state. And so a new constitutional doctrine was created that allowed for territories to be so-called unincorporated territories that could be held indefinitely, neither as independent nations nor as states.
So someone who's a citizen of Puerto Rico is a citizen of the United States, but has essentially no representation in the federal government. Can you talk about the situation that over 3 million Puerto Ricans find themselves in?
That's right. So birth in Puerto Rico brings U.S. citizenship. But because Puerto Rico is a territory rather than a state, it has no voting representation in Washington, in the House, in the Senate, or a vote for the president. And so what that means is that Puerto Rico lacks hard political power in the nation's capital. If you're a U.S. citizen in Puerto Rico who moves to the mainland, you then are like any other citizen. You can vote in the state you move to. And if somebody from the mainland were to move to Puerto Rico, they would lose their ability to vote in federal elections.
There's a sense, I think, often from Puerto Rico after a hurricane 5 years ago, after the hurricane this year, that if they were a state, they would get more of a response, more attention from the federal government in the event of a disaster. Is there something to that argument?
That's almost certainly true. So 5 years ago, the difference between the disaster relief in Puerto Rico and that for hurricanes on the mainland was stark. The island had a large number of deaths attributable to the hurricane and to the inadequate response. And it took a very long time for the repair and recovery to occur. Indeed, the recovery was incomplete at the moment that they were hit again by a hurricane 5 years later, which is part of why the power grid collapsed so totally in the wake of the hurricane.
We're talking to University of Michigan law professor Sam Ehrman about Puerto Rico's role as a U.S. territory in the wake of Hurricane Fiona, what it would mean to become a state. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think that the U.S. overlooks disasters in Puerto Rico because it's a territory that it might not overlook in a full-on state? Do you think Puerto Rico should be a state? What questions do you have about this ambiguous territory that this American territory is in. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Sam Ehrman, law professor at the University of Michigan, author of the book Almost Citizens, Puerto Rico, the U.S. Constitution, and Empire. He's with us today looking at how Puerto Rico functions as a U.S. territory in the wake of Hurricane Fiona and what might be different if it became a full-on state. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. If you have a question or a connection with Puerto Rico, call in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts. Let's bring on a caller now. Raymond is with us in Green Bay. Raymond, hi.
Hi. I have a question I've had for a long time. How can we tax the people of Puerto Rico if they don't have representation? I thought our Constitution said no taxation without representation.
Raymond, thanks for the call. Sam, what's the story with federal taxes on residents of Puerto Rico?
Well, it's exactly right that the idea that there would not be taxation without representation was at the heart of the American Revolution. And in Puerto Rico, they do pay extensive taxes of various sorts, although not federal income tax. And that's possible because that although the notion of no taxation without representation lies at the founding moment of our nation, the Constitution does not give representation to federal territories, and it does not include any prohibition on taxation as a result. So that sort of general constitutional or national principle has not been operationalized into constitutional doctrine.
Raymond, thanks for that call. We had a question from Eric in Madison who brings up, he's heard Puerto Rico referred to as a commonwealth, not as a territory. What does it mean when we say the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico?
So Puerto Rico went through a process where the island created its own constitution that the U.S. Congress was willing to approve with certain changes. And as part of that, the territory of Puerto Rico took on the name Commonwealth. But it, although it's now referred to as Commonwealth, it remains as a constitutional matter a territory. That's why if you live in Puerto Rico, you don't get to vote for federal representation. And it's also why Puerto Rico is not an independent country, but remains within U.S. sovereignty.
Thanks for that question, Eric. We hear things whenever there's a disaster like this, the Jones Act comes up, a law that restricts shipping to Puerto Rico, correct me if I'm wrong on this, to ships that are flagged with U.S. registries. That's not a rule that applies elsewhere, you know, in the mainland United States, for example. It's currently suspended, so other ships can carry things like diesel fuel there. Why is that something that's applied to Puerto Rico and not anywhere else in the U.S.?
So the Jones Act, to start, what it does is it raises prices in Puerto Rico. So if goods have to touch on the mainland and be put onto a U.S. flagged ship, it means that that's going to add cost. And so it's sort of like a tax on Puerto Ricans. And the purpose of this tax is that it helps to support the U.S. shipping industry. So if it has to be U.S. flagged ships that do the deliveries, that creates demand for U.S. flagged ships. So what's going on is that the Jones Act is imposing an implicit tax on Puerto Rico that's redistributing money to shore up the shipping industry.
Now, we've seen advisory referenda in Puerto Rico. I think the most recent one showed support for statehood for Puerto Rico. Clearly, it takes more than that, though. What would have to happen for Puerto Rico to turn from a territory to a state?
So the Constitution is actually clear on this. Congress has to vote statehood for Puerto Rico. Congress is the branch of the government that's empowered to admit Puerto Rico as a state.
And what's, could you talk a little bit about the politics that have made that not happen, not really even come close to happening?
Yes. So there's two things that I think have gotten in the way traditionally. On the one hand is Puerto Rico, there's a desire in the United States to not impose a new status on Puerto Rico. And so there's been questions among U.S. lawmakers about whether it's clear that Puerto Ricans want to be a U.S. state. On the flip side, the United States has long not made clear what statuses it would actually be willing to offer to Puerto Rico. So there's not been legislation out of Congress saying, Puerto Rico, you can be a state, you can be a territory, and this is all the changes we'd make to the laws, or you can be an independent country, and here's the kind of treaty that we'd be willing to give you to structure our relationships going forward. And so this has created a sort of decision-making paralysis where Puerto Ricans, because they don't really know what's on offer, aren't in a position to make a really clear statement about what status it is they would like. And then U.S. lawmakers have often pointed to that lack of a decision as a reason not to act.
Short of statehood, is there a legal change, I guess it would have to come from Congress, that you would like to see that might help Puerto Rico, especially when it comes to things like living through and recovering from disasters?
I think the most helpful thing that Congress could do would be to make a concrete offer to Puerto Rico about status options. And so if Congress were to say, what we're willing to offer in terms of independence is the following, and what we're willing to offer if you remain a territory, you know, is this, and we're also willing to offer statehood, that would permit Puerto Ricans to be able to make an informed choice among various options. And I think that would go a long way to breaking the logjam.
Sam, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Sam Ehrman, professor of law at the University of Michigan and author of the book Almost Citizens, Puerto Rico, the U.S. Constitution, and Empire. He's with us today for a look at Puerto Rico's role as a territory and the potential for future statehood as the country recovers from another major, or as the territory, excuse me, recovers from another major hurricane. Coming up, Congress is working to clarify the role of the vice president and of Congress itself in certifying presidential elections. We'll find out what's at stake. First, it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Member Drive. Your support is the foundation of funding for WPR programs. It's the largest piece. It's what makes the Ideas Network your go-to place for great conversations. That's why Jill Nadeau is with me to encourage you to make your gift in support of the programs you count on at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
So you can make an even greater impact when you give right now, because $25,000 will be released when 500 people, including you, make a gift in support of WPR programs by the end of today.
So what's going on there? What happens is a group of generous members, they've created this challenge hoping to inspire your support of the programs you and your entire community rely on.
And let's meet this challenge. We're getting really, really close. So your gift of any amount now, it makes such a difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
In the last segment, we visited Puerto Rico, still recovering from a major hurricane earlier this month, and looked at the legal status it's in as a territory, not a state, not an independent country, and helped, I hope, answer some questions we might all have about just how that system works, for better or worse. These are the kind of informative conversations you can count on here on Central Time.
Well, I know it answered a lot of the questions that I had, Rob, so I know one for good, I definitely learned something. And, you know, I did that because WPR is listener-supported, and that means that your donation at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Well, it makes the many topics you tune in for every day possible. So choose an amount that works for you, then make your gift.
It's easy to support Wisconsin Public Radio, and really the easiest way is to become a sustainer. You'll make ongoing monthly gifts from your bank account or a credit or debit card.
Some people give $10 a month. Many give 15 or 20. So just pick an amount that works for you and become a sustainer now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Then sit back and enjoy the ease and convenience of supporting the programs that you value.
It's an election year, and coverage on Wisconsin Public Radio keeps you informed of the latest developments every step of the way.
That's right. It is an election year. We take you beyond the sound bites, though. So you get access to a range of perspectives on the issues. You know, this kind of in-depth news, well, it's just vital and is only possible with listener support. So cast your vote for Wisconsin Public Radio with your gift at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Everyone should make the gift that works for them. For you, that might be a gift of $100 or $200 a month.
Well, maybe that's why you pay for cable or your family phone plan. They're expensive. So listening to WPR is something that you do every day. Put a value on it, like other things that are important to you, at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And your gift goes extra far now because a group of generous members are going to give $25,000 in challenge funds when 500 people, including you, step up to support the programs you count on by the end of today.
And show off your support for Wisconsin Public Radio and ask for limited edition WPR tote bag. It's perfect for books, groceries, or your next errand. This tote will be your new favorite on-the-go accessory, and it's yours when you give $10 a month or more at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
We heard from Chris in Mineral Point, who says, "You keep me company in the car and at home. Your content is knowledgeable and appreciated." Thanks, Chris says. Chris, thank you so much. I'm glad we're out there keeping you company wherever you are, whatever you're doing. Sometimes it's just nice to hear somebody talking. Hopefully it's good, you know, informative talking along the way too. If you appreciate that companionship, make a gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell has thrown support behind a bipartisan effort to clarify how presidential elections are certified. We'll talk about the changes and why McConnell says it's needed after the January 6th attacks on the U.S. Capitol. First, it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Member Drive. Jill Nadeau joins me now. We are here to raise the money that pays for the programs that you enjoy, programs like Central Time. Support from people like you is the largest piece of funding for WPR programs, and that's why your support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is such a big deal.
And Rob, it's the last day of our challenge, and that challenge is from a group of very generous members who will give $25,000 in matching funds, but only when 500 people step up to support the programs that you count on.
You can help us get there. It's their way of encouraging you to join them in supporting the WPR programs that inform and inspire you and the entire state of Wisconsin.
And your participation is really, really important. So be one of the 500 people to meet this challenge before midnight tonight. It starts with your gift at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You listen to the Ideas Network because you want to know stuff. You want to know what's going on. Find out about interesting, cool, and or important things in the world. We're here with you, exploring all the angles on Central Time.
Absolutely. And this show has a real Wisconsin focus, connecting you with guests from around the state with the issues that affect your life. You know, listener support makes all the stories that you hear on Central Time possible. So join in with your gift now. It makes a big difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Listeners make the programs here on Wisconsin Public Radio worth doing. Members make them possible.
Absolutely. And you get all those great shows because members, people like you who donate, kick in the largest amount of funding for WPR programs. So become a member now. Help make WPR possible with your gift of $100 or maybe $10 a month. You know, you choose. Any amount works at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. 202-255-2.
Take your Wisconsin Public Radio pride on the go with the new WPR tote bag. The sturdy, USA-made natural cotton bag features a vibrant orange and blue design. With shoulder-length handles, it's perfect for groceries or books. And showing off your love for WPR and Wisconsin wherever you go. Ask for your tote bag today when you give $10 a month or more. Here's how.
Go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 to make your donation this fall member drive. It's Central Time. Rob Ferret here with Jill Nadeau. The WPR programs you enjoy are possible thanks to your support. Your gift of $10 a month, $100 a month, whatever amount you choose really does make a difference.
And, you know, a $10 a month contribution works out to just 33 cents a day. When you think about the daily information and inspiration you get from WPR, that's a great value.
What else can you get for 33 cents a day? Not a whole lot.
No.
Make your gift of 10 bucks a month right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And that 33 cent a day investment will yield programs that keep you engaged and up to date.
And your gift right now says, I value this program. I want more of it. It makes me think. It makes me laugh. But you fill in the blank with how you feel when you hear this show. Those are powerful feelings. And you make a powerful statement when you support that, what you value and what you believe in. So give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And added bonus, your gift right now helps us meet our member challenge in effect till the end of the day today when 500 people make a gift for WPR. $25,000 from generous members will be unlocked for the WPR programs you rely on.
It's a lot of money, and we're getting close, so please support the programs that you value. And, you know, you can show off your love for WPR with the latest WPR tote bag. It's really nice looking. Blue, orange design. It's going to pop. You can use it for work, errands, fun, whatever. I know I always need another tote. It starts with your gift of $10 a month or more at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Now is a great time to become a sustaining member of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's easy to set up convenient ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or your credit card. Get it started now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Sandy and Ed in Bailey's Harbor say, we thank each and every one who makes WPR possible, from host to staff to members. Lyndon Madison says, WPR is on every radio in the house. Yay!
Fantastic. That's great to hear. Thank you so much for giving. Now it's you, your turn. How about you? Make your gift. You count on us for great conversations every day here on the Ideas Network. We really do count on you to help make it possible with your gift. You can do it right now online. Takes just a few minutes at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. And thank you so much for your support. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell endorsed a bipartisan effort this week to clarify how presidential elections are certified. That's after former President Donald Trump and his supporters tried to pressure then-Vice President Mike Pence to throw out legitimate election results from some states after the 2020 election. Their argument centered on the Electoral Count Act, a law that's more than a century old that's supposed to tell Congress and the vice president what to do if there's a dispute about a state's electors. But some lawmakers and political watchers have said, as it's written, the law's language confuses more than it clarifies. David Cannon is a professor of American politics at UW-Madison. David, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Good to be with you.
Let's start with a listen to Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell on the Senate floor. This is Tuesday, talking about this Electoral Count Act.
Congress process for counting the presidential electors' votes was written 135 years ago. The chaos that came to a head on January 6th of last year certainly underscored the need for an update.
David, can you talk about how the Electoral Count Act came up around January 6th in particular?
Well, yes. So what McConnell is talking about is the ambiguity in that law that was written in 1887 that allowed, for example, Donald Trump to pressure Mike Pence to exercise discretion over the slates of electors from different states. And Mike Pence had to tell the president, you know, sorry, my understanding of this law and the Constitution is that I can't play that role. But there was enough ambiguity both in the vice president's role and in how the whole process happens of challenging those slates of electors that Senator McConnell is definitely right. This law is in desperate need of an update.
Right. The general understanding was we don't go through the whole election, certify electors, send them to Congress, and then, oh, yeah, the sitting vice president can just reject them. Customarily, everybody, I think, agreed on that until it became an issue at the beginning of 2021, right?
Right, exactly. And so what this law would do, so the Manchin-Collins bill that went through the Senate Rules Committee earlier this week by a 14-1 vote. It was surprising the degree of bipartisanship. Ted Cruz is the only person on the committee that voted against it. So it looks like this will have enough votes to easily overcome a filibuster in the Senate. So it's a really good chance that this will be enacted into law. And what the law would do is three or four really important things to make sure that January 6th couldn't happen again. First is to recognize that the vice president only has a ceremonial role here. He has no substantive control over the process at all. He's basically just opening the ballots and counting the votes. Second is to raise the threshold for how those slates of electors from states can be challenged. Under that, the current law, the 1887 law, it just takes one House member and one senator to challenge a slate of electors. That's it. And so the Senate version of this law would increase that threshold to 20% of both the House and the Senate. So 20 senators and it'd be, 87 House members would be needed to ask for a challenge to a slate of electors. And it clarifies how that challenge could be justified. Under the current law, it's a failed election that isn't defined. And so Trump supporters were saying that the 2020 election in Wisconsin, Arizona, Pennsylvania, Georgia were failed elections because there was widespread voter fraud that meant that these slates of electors weren't legitimate. Well, those claims were thrown out by the courts and were never proven, but that was the basis for their claim of a failed election. Now the Senate version and the House version is even stronger language on this, but basically defines it as an extraordinary or catastrophic event, something that prevents the election from happening, like, say, Hurricane Ian hitting on Election Day and half the state of Florida not being able to vote on Election Day. That would mean that any slate of electors submitted from Florida could be challenged because that's pretty clearly a failed election in Florida. And then finally, having a more expedited and clear process for challenging any dispute about slates of electors and making clear that the candidate who would be, having his slate or her slate of electors denied has a right to sue in federal court about this, and also ensuring that courts could review whether a rogue governor has kind of gone off and done his own thing and submitted a slate that wasn't legitimate, and that now could be reviewed by the courts as well. So it really closes a lot of the loopholes in that existing law and makes it, if not impossible, much more difficult for something like was attempted on January 6th to ever happen in the future.
Now you mentioned there was a U.S. House version. It passed, but with much more limited Republican support. The standards are a little different. I think one-third of the House and Senate, a bigger percentage, would have to object, for example. But the Senate version seems to have, as you said, bipartisan support. Is part of the story here, last time it was Republican Mike Pence in that seat. Next time it's going to be Democrat Kamala Harris. Like, this could go either way, so maybe both parties are willing to sign on.
Yeah, and I think there is just a genuine interest in trying to make sure that some of these other loopholes are closed as well, because the 1887 law is really a mess. It's just no terms are defined very clearly, and this is an invitation to having some more shenanigans in the future. So I think that the fact that you had seven Republicans on the committee voting for it, and you have eight other co-sponsors that weren't on the committee, eight other Republicans. So you have at least 15 Republicans who have publicly indicated they're supporting this bill now in the Senate. Whereas, as you point out, in the House, the only Republicans who voted for it were the same ones who voted to impeach Donald Trump. And none of them are coming back after the elections. They've all either been defeated or have retired. And so there were really no other basis of Republican support there. So we'll see. Hopefully what will happen is the House will just basically accept the Senate version and not have to work out any other differences, because you wouldn't want to have to go back and renegotiate this in the Senate again, because there may not be time to do that in the lame duck session in December.
Talking to David Cannon, professor of American politics at UW-Madison, looking at the Electoral Count Act. Changes look likely to happen in the Senate, and the House might well follow suit then, changing the process for challenging electoral votes from states in presidential elections. Are there other changes, David, that you think should have been added or ought to be added, even if the Senate maybe wouldn't be willing to do them right now?
Well, the one thing in the House version, I don't think you mentioned the 20% versus 33% difference. I think that's fine. I mean, 20% is enough of a threshold. I'm not too worried about that. The one thing in the House version that I think would be nice to have, and I don't think the Senate's going to be willing to renegotiate this, but is they have a clearer and longer list of what exactly is meant by a failed election and a catastrophic failure. And it makes it clear that they really are talking about things like a hurricane. And so it wouldn't be anything like was claimed in 2020 would be in that category at all. And the Senate version, strongly suggests that with their language, again, of an extraordinary and catastrophic event is the language they use. So it's pretty clear that that's not what was being claimed in 2020, but the House version is more detailed there, and it probably would be better to have a little more detail. But to me, that's not a big enough thing to hang this up, that's for sure.
Now, one thing that did come up after the 2020 election we had in Wisconsin and a handful of other states, some Republican electors, their electoral slate that would have been electors had their side won, signed paper saying, yeah, we're the electors. And then some supporters of the election challenge said, aha, we have two sets of electors, so we have to do something to sort that out. Do these changes prevent that from happening, or prevent that from being advanced as an argument?
Yeah, so it makes it absolutely clear that there is only one legitimate slate of electors, and that's the slate that the governor is required to submit to Congress. And that's where there's the provision that if that were to not be done in that process, and you get a rogue governor who just does something on his own without recognizing the legitimate slate of electors, then that could be challenged in the federal courts. And that process is made very clear in both the House version and the Senate version.
And I think because of that provision, Senator Cruz, who you mentioned voted against this in committee, said this is a mission creep. It's advancing federal power over states' ability to manage their elections. What do you make of that argument?
Well, so I think that argument could be leveled a little bit more at the House version than the Senate version, because the Senate version also has a provision that makes it clear that the role of the state courts will still play a role in every other aspect of enforcing an election law. And so other challenges that would come up about elections would still be litigated in state court. And it makes that clear that this is not like a federal takeover of election law. And so I think, that concern did come up when this being negotiated in the Senate. And I think they addressed that concern pretty well. So I think Ted Cruz's concerns there are really, I think, very overblown, because that provision about litigating in federal court was very clearly only involved when you have a rogue governor who is trying to illegally submit an alternative slate of electors.
So as you say, this may be passed in the lame duck session. If it isn't, I've seen some arguments from politics watchers that if it doesn't pass before the new Congress is seated, especially if Republicans take control of one or both houses, it's very unlikely to pass at that point. Do you think that's true?
I think that's absolutely true. This definitely has to pass in December, or there's very little chance it'll go through if we do have split control in January.
If this does pass as currently written in the Senate, does it make you feel, less nervous about the potential for a repeat of January 2021?
It absolutely does. I mean, in fact, about 10 months ago, maybe now, I was on a panel with a bunch of other election law people, and we each said, what's the one thing if you could pass into law that would make you feel better about like the survival of our democracy, what would it be? And this was the one I mentioned. I said, this is the most important single thing they can do, and it should be able to get done. And so some of the other things that were talked about, would be, more partisan, but this is one I thought, should have bipartisan support. And about 10 months ago, that was the one I picked to say, yeah, this is the one that would make me sleep at night a little better.
David, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Okay, good to be with you.
That's David Cannon, professor of American politics at UW-Madison, with us today to talk about a bipartisan effort in Congress to update the Electoral Count Act, a law that outlines the role of Congress and the vice president in certifying presidential election results. Now it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Member Drive. Jill Nadeau joins me now. You rely on the Ideas Network for informative, interesting conversations. We count on you to keep programs like this one going strong.
We certainly do. Listener support is the largest source of funding for Wisconsin Public Radio programs, and that's why your gift of any amount right now makes an important difference. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
An extra reason, an extra impact when you give right now. $25,000 is going to be released when 500 people, including you, make a gift in support of WPR programs by the end of the day today. And we are advancing steadily, I think, toward that goal.
We are. You know, at the beginning of the day, I thought, oh, we're never going to make it. And we're so close now. It is wonderful. Our listeners really came through for us. A group of generous members have created this challenge, and it's to inspire you to support the programs that you and basically our entire community rely on.
Your participation right now is a big deal. Be one of the 500 people to meet this two-day challenge before midnight arrives. Whether you've never given before or your monthly sustainer making an additional gift, your contribution is going to help us meet that goal. Join in at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
You know, in the last segment, we talked about some of this, the bill in Congress regarding elections, and it's so important that we understand what it says and what it will mean and what may happen to it. And you get that information and you count on that information from Central Time.
WPR's listeners supported. That means your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 makes the many topics you tune in for every day possible. Choose the amount that works for you and then make your gift.
And take your Wisconsin Public Radio pride on the road with your new WPR tote. It's a really bright orange and blue design, and your support of WPR programs you value will be on full display. And ask for yours with your contribution of $10 a month or more at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
I was driving along and they started talking about being ADD. And I'm ADD. I consider it a blessing now because they had talked about a book called You Mean I'm Not Lazy, Crazy, or Stupid. It pointed out things and it made things understandable for me, so it really changed my life. I'm John Ink from Wausau, Wisconsin, and I listen to Wisconsin Public Radio, and it is my source for a clear view of the world.
Make your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. It's the Fall Member Drive on Central Time. Rob Ferret here with Jill Nadeau. Listener support is the largest source of funding for all the WPR programs you count on. That's why your gift of $10 a month, $100 a month, whatever amount you choose, really does make a difference.
It does. And at WPR, we have a core group of supporters who continue to give and give generously, and they willingly contribute because they depend on this vital resource. Maybe you rely on WPR too, and for that reason, you haven't, and for whatever reason, rather, you haven't given yet.
Well, we're here to tell you that WPR relies on new donors, first-time donors just like you, to grow and keep high-quality programs on the air. How about making today the day? Show your support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Your gift of $5 or $10 or $20 a month, any amount that's right for you, is all it takes.
You know, it's easy to spend a dollar or more a day on things that are part of your routine, like maybe you like coffee or you have a favorite snack.
That's right. Consider the news, info, and inspiration from Wisconsin and around the world that you get every day from listening to WPR. Maybe that dollar a day, $30 a month, is just the right donation for you. Sign up right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and support the programs you enjoy every day.
And don't forget that a group of very generous members will give us $25,000. That's right, $25,000 in challenge funds when 500 people, hopefully including you, step up to support the programs that you count on.
Your gift makes an extra difference with this challenge going on. Each and every gift brings us one closer to that goal that we need to hit by midnight. And by the way, show off your support for Wisconsin Public Radio and ask for the limited edition WPR tote. It's perfect for books, groceries, your next errand. This tote will be your new favorite on-the-go accessory. It's yours when you give $10 a month or more. So think about that. You're supporting Great Conversations, of course. You're helping us meet this big challenge, and you get to take a tote home with you after it's all said and done. Make your gift right now, WPR.org, or call 888-202-2552. Looking to hit this very important challenge by midnight tonight. You can do it. And Jill, they can become sustaining members, right, while they make their gift.
That's right. If you're a sustaining member, you're making ongoing monthly gifts. And if you're doing that right now, well, thank you so much. But it's a really, you know, it's a great way to keep giving money, increasing your support. That's the word I was looking for. So make the day that you increase your support of WPR by $5 or $10 a month, whatever amount you choose, at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Heidi in Milwaukee says, WPR is part of my day every day. If you're listening and you haven't donated, Heidi says, why not make today the day and that you make a contribution for the first time? Heidi promises you won't regret making a gift. I got to agree with Heidi. I can't argue with her on that.
Not at all. So make your gift right now because it is so important at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And thank you.